I spend my time writing. I have an Anne Sexton poem here that probably covers my reasons as well as anything. You ask me why I spend my life writing. Do I find entertainment? Is it worthwhile? Above all, does it pay? That's the big question everybody wants. If not, then is there a reason? I write only because there is a voice within me that will not be still. And I think people that start coming to writers' groups or come to writers' groups at all have those voices or a voice inside of them that is talking to them, and they want to find ways of getting them out. I've called it accessing the unconscious because the kind of writing exercise, the kind of writing format that I use is nothing I say is sacred. I like to think of this as a listening to the sacred time, but nothing I say is sacred. Take what works for you, just forget about all the rest. Or find your own way, which is what we all have to do in writing anyway. But I thought what was sent out by the director about listening to the sacred really was so applicable to writing. And I'm going to talk mostly about poetry because that's what I love, because I think it's the core of everything. You know, you can make short stories out of poems, you can go anywhere with them, but to get you can read a short poem and it can just give you everything right there in that brief poem. But everyone has a story to tell, and being able to tell that story is very important, and telling it is important, and to be understood and accepted by other people also in telling our stories. The other important part of that is listening to other people's stories. You know how you're in a conversation and the other person is talking and you're not listening, you're just standing there waiting to get in there with your story? The really honorable thing that we can learn to do is to listen, and that's what we'll do in our group today as we write and read. Listening to the sacred, as he says in his, is also an act of conversation between ourselves and creation, and between our, when we let that inner voice be heard, that's when we can really tie into the creative part of us. And so what we're going to do during this hour is to listen, to write, and listen to one another, and tell our stories to one another as much as we can during this time. And the one story that listening to stories always makes me think of is Chekhov's story called Heartache, in which somehow I left the last part of the story off, which would not be crucial because I did find it in the library. But since it's a translation, they're not the same. And this one is awful compared to the one that I have. So I don't want to read it all to you. I mean, it's really dangerous letting a writer get up in front of people because they spend a lot of time in silence, but when you talk about writing, that's what gets you excited and you can just go on forever. And then also reading. But this one is called Heartache, and it's about a cab driver in Russia whose son has just died. And I'm going to read you the first paragraph simply because one of the big things that we're going to talk about all week in our writing is detail. And that's very important. But to listen to the details in this, and then I'm just going to read the last part of the story. But this again is the sacredness of the story that's in each one of us. Oh, and also it's called Lament in this book, and it's called Heartache in this book. Which one do you like best? How many like Heartache?
Heartache.
Yeah, I like it. Much better. And the quote that's given at the beginning is, "To whom shall I tell my sorrow?" I mean, to me, just that line is so loaded. I mean, it just almost, you don't need the story anymore. To whom shall I tell my sorrow? Evening twilight. Large flakes of wet snow are circling lazily about the street lamps which have just been lighted, settling in a thin, soft layer on roofs, horses' backs, people's shoulders, caps. Iona Potapov, the cabbie, is all white like a ghost, as hunched as a living body can be. He sits on the box without stirring. If a whole snowdrift were to fall on him, even then perhaps he would not find it necessary to shake it off. His nag, too, is white and motionless. Her immobility, the angularity of her shape, and the stick-like straightness of her legs make her look like a penny gingerbread horse. She is probably lost in thought. Anyone who has been torn away from the plow, from the familiar gray scenes, and cast into this whirlpool, full of monstrous lights, of ceaseless uproar, and hurrying people cannot help thinking. So then he gets a chance, he gets a fare, and he starts to tell his story to the first fare, and is just ignored and told to hurry up, I want to get where I'm going. And then he has three young men who are come, they've been drinking and they're going to another place to drink, and he tries, and he's happy for a while because they're full of life and vigorous, and he listens to them. But then he's given an opening to, the one of them says to him, see if I can find the right place now. Are you married? No, it's on this side. Okay, one of them says, are you married? And he then tries to tell him, no, yes, he is married, but now he does not have a son. And of course, then they completely ignore him again. So actually, he ends up back at the cab station. And of course, there's another cabbie there who is sleeping when he comes, but then he goes to talk to him, and the other cabbie falls back to sleep. And so he starts to tell him about his son's death, and then he looks to see what effect his words have had, and he's back asleep again. And so he decides that he will go out and talk to his horse. He puts on his coat and goes to the stable to his horse. He thinks of the corn, the hay, the weather. When he is alone, he dares not think of his son. He can speak about him to anyone, but to think of him and picture him to himself is unbearable, painful. Are you tucking in? Iona asks his horse, looking at its bright eyes. Go on, tuck in. Though we've not earned our corn, we can eat hay. Yes, I am too old to drive. My son could have, not I. He was a first-rate cab driver. If only he had lived. Iona is silent for a moment, then continues. That's how it is, my old horse. There's no more Kuzma Ionich. He has left us to live, and he went off, pop. Now let's say you had a foal. You were the foal's mother, and suddenly, let's say that foal went and left you to live after him. It would be sad, wouldn't it? The little horse munches, listens, and breathes over its master's hand. Iona's feelings are too much for him, and he tells the little horse the whole story. Now, some of us don't even have a horse, but we can write. And that's the wonderful thing about writing, we can tell our stories. If you remember or saw any of the Bill Moyers called The Power of the Word, the subtitle to that was Where the Soul Lives. And I don't know how many of you have been writing, and that's not important because it's just that you start. But if you have been writing with intention, saying, I am going to write the story of my life, or I am going to write the great short story or the great novel, what you need now to do, and maybe you're already doing it in doing that, is to learn to write into the unconscious and not decide what you are going to write, but let the writing find you and to let it surprise you with what comes out of it. And that's what we're going to do this week in my classes. There's a philosophy of an old Indian tradition that if you have a story, you tell it. If you don't tell your story, you suffer. And he has another part. If you tell it, it's cathartic and therapeutic. But I don't want this to sound like a therapy session because it isn't therapy. It's just that we have a gathering of people who are willing to listen to a story that needs to be told. And so we're not going to help you out of anything or, you know, it may work for you to work on things that way. But here we're only going to give you the respect of our listening. So it's a little different. But whatever we deal with in the creative process, whether we're artists or whether we're making rugs or I don't care what kind of creative thing you're doing, I think we're trying to answer questions like, what is the nature of my world? Who am I in the world? What is my relationship to myself? What is my relationship to you? And what is my relationship to God? And whatever terms you put those questions. I think those are the things we start dealing with in our writing, whether we know it or not. And one of the writers that, I'm not going to give you a reading list. In the literature they send out, they said, don't make copies. We respect trees. And they said, you can only bring 75 pounds on the ferry, so I didn't bring a lot of material with me. So you are really going to have to listen. And I see these things don't write very dark, so. So, but Mary Oliver is a wonderful, wonderful poet. She's out with, I think, her collected works now. And there's another one, which I thought I had along, called 12 Moons. But the reason that I like her, and this is a wonderful setting to read Mary Oliver in, is because although she's out on the other coast, she writes about nature a lot, and it's really quite wonderful. And of course, words like wonderful are words you can't use in your writing, but I can use them as I'm talking to you. But this is her poem called, now if I'd been able to bring copies, you could all look at this, but I want you to listen for details and maybe even write down, I'm going to read it twice. And maybe the second time I read through it, write down the words that have the most energy for you when you listen to it. It's called The Summer Day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around her enormous and with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Do I need to do it once more? Did you get it? I just think it's so wonderful. For whatever kind of writing you're doing, this poem, if you read it every day before you started, look at the detail. I mean, it's not any grasshopper, it's this grasshopper, the one that's not moving its jaws. I mean, just specific detail that knows paying attention. She does she know what prayer is? Sure she does. She says, I don't know what prayer is exactly, but she does. This poem is a prayer. It's a wonderful. But the last line too, tell me, what is it you plan to do with your wonderful, wild and precious life? For example, the line in which she says, I know how to lie down in the grass and so, which is what I have been doing all day. How many of us would be willing to do that and then, you know, someone comes in at night and says, well, what did you do all day? Oh, I was lying out in the grass. I mean, would we admit that in our Norwegian, Lutheran, uptight backgrounds? Do we admit that? We always have to have been doing something, you know, in a physical sense that has a product, whereas what we want is the process, which is so wonderful. And so what we're going to do is have a wonderful process of discovery. Okay, let's do a writing exercise so that we live up to, first I better give you, and now I'm going to hand this out, but you have to give it back to me because I get a big class tomorrow, you know. So if you'd each just take one of these and we'll start on the first side about creativity. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to check to make sure. Do you all have something to write on? No. Oh, I should have had that written in. Let's see. Where's my note? Who would need paper? I've got. I'll be able to fill this note much faster. How many of you journal? How many of you keep a? Yeah, I like that. I know what you. Okay. Pass things down. We're going to need lots of paper. And now this is just This is just out of this television series on creativity, which I didn't watch on TV, but I bought the book. And I like it so much. Everyone is creative in some way or another. We all do creative kinds of things. I think we need to do a lot more of it, because that's what will make us whole, and not make us whole in the sense that we'll be okay then, but I mean, so often we just emphasize learning or sports or, you know, but we're whole people, and all of us have a creative urge of some kind that we can follow if we listen to it. So this is just the tools for developing your creativity. Faith in your own creativity. All of us have it. You don't have to be anybody. Writers aren't special people. Artists aren't special people. They're simply people who have taken time to listen. They have paid attention, and that's what they do. William Stafford, who is the other person that, if I didn't know who God was, I'd think it was William Stafford. But he's the gentlest, most wonderful man you could ever read. And I'm going to read some of his things and you can see how quiet and gentle he is. He also has, this was the one, you know, all the self-help books. I read The Australian Crawl, which is his other book on writing. And I saw the title of this one, and of course I've been reading all, you know, I wanted my life to be perfect. And I saw this, you must revise your life. I thought, oh good, you'll have the answer. Anybody, of course, you have to find your own answers. But he's a wonderful poet, and what he wrote, if you need permission to write, and that for one thing is many people go to their first writing things for permission. Sometimes you get it other ways. Sometimes you read a writer, and his writing gives you somehow permission to write. Or we all have our own ways of getting there, but sometimes, some of us need more permission than others, so we spend our whole lives going to workshops and we never get to writing. But this man is just a wonderful person to read. Those are the two books, and then he has many, many books of poems. So faith in your own creativity. You don't need permission from anyone else, but if you do, find someone you really like as a writer and read that person. And the first workshop that I went to back in 1978, I'd never seen a live poet before. I didn't know live. I mean, the one woman saying she lived near an Indian reservation and didn't know it until she moved away. I went through how many years of school and didn't know that there were live poets. I thought they were all dead, you know. I didn't study any contemporary literature at all. But went to take a class from a woman named Betty Bridgman, who probably is still running around teaching classes today. Sat there wondering what this poet would look like, you know. Every woman that walked in, or man that walked in, I knew it was a woman, so I was looking only at the women. But so in walks this woman in a brown polyester double knit suit, so that will tell you about what year it was, and sandals with shells on the straps, you know. Just this little bag lady is what she looked like when she came in. Most wonderful woman in the whole world that I could have taken it from, because she said, the first thing she said was, if you think you're a poet, you are. And I thought, what a wonderful thing to tell all of us scared people in there that have been sitting in our closets writing, you know, to go from there. And so that freed me up a lot. So faith in your own creativity, absence from judgment. And that's one thing, if you come through the week, that's the one thing we have to learn, is to keep this little editor off our shoulder in the initial writings of it. Later on, you use the editor, but to begin with, you don't judge anything you write. And we don't judge what anybody else writes in the group today or all week long. We're just going to write. And then precise observation. And once you start doing this, you'll never walk the same in the woods. You'll never go anyplace. I think it's Cézanne who said, you could stay in the same place forever and just change the tilt of your head. You're an artist, you know that a lot. I think visual artists maybe know that better than writers, I don't know. But you know, you don't have to go any place. You don't have to have wonderful lives. And I mean, all our lives are wonderful, but I mean, you don't have to do what we always think is spectacular. If somebody else does it, it's wonderful and spectacular. But the very simplest lives have wonderful things that can be written. And then penetrating questions. Writers or creative people are always asking questions. Maybe not of other people, but at least of themselves. But then the last part, creativity springs from inner resources that you have within you in great abundance. Now this always seems kind of contradictory because so much of what we write about is the sadness in our lives and the crap that happens and the awful things are what we write out. Someone said, you know, you often ask, well, don't you write anything that's happy? Well, not very often, you know, but this is what these are the things we have. Intuition, will, joy, courage, and the last one is compassion. This man has compassion in his writing. Mary Oliver has it. When you go around to find writers you like, if they don't have it, quit reading them. Because writing, if it gives you all the stuff that they dump on you, they should also lift you out somehow. So depend on good writers to do that for you. Okay, we're going to do
a question.
Yes.
Oh, under sure. That absence of judgment, your VOJ? I mean, I can kind of guess what it might be, but what does that actually stand for?
Voice of judgment.
Voice of judgment.
Yes, voice of judgment. Thank you. Otherwise, I could very often have quite a few typos too, so. I'm an Maybe we should just take a few. I'm obviously going 30 miles a minute here, so. Is there anything anyone would like to ask so far?
Tell me again where you do your poetry. You live in the Northwest?
Oh, I'm from Minnesota.
I'm from Minnesota, thank you.
Goodhue, Minnesota, a little town of about 500 people. I'm close to Northfield, Minnesota, thankfully, and belong to the Northfield Women Poets who have given me. We meet once a week. I'm from South Dakota originally, and hiking in the mountains yesterday, I decided I am a prairie person, probably. A little claustrophobic up there. I like trees, too, but not...
From Nebraska said the same thing. We just had someone from Nebraska that just came, and they felt the trees, they thought we were going to suffocate them.
But I even get that way in southern Minnesota. There are all these settlements that the Norwegians made. I suppose it looked like the fjords or something, but I drive down in there, and I just have to get out. It's too close. Okay, if you don't get anything else today, I want you to get the writing method that's on the back of this sheet. And this will help you with anything, any kind of writing you do. And Natalie Goldberg has been in Minnesota a lot. She lives in New Mexico. She has this book. I couldn't find my other book. I'm always loaning them out and they don't come back. Her first one,
Writing Down the Bones.
Thank you. And her second one is Wild Mind. Don't you love it? It's just what she is. She also has a new novel out, and Karen, we said she'd read it, and it's wonderful, especially if you're a writer. She's a Zen had a Zen master, so a lot in this one is paying tribute to her Zen master who died. But it has a chapter, and then at the end of the chapter, there's a section that says, "Do this." So you can't say, oh, I'm going to wait till I get to the end of the book before I do any writing. You have to do it right then. And she's wonderful. She's just, energy. You just can't help but write when you read her. So this, and that's the other thing. Writers aren't original. We borrow everything from anybody else if we can get by with it. Borrow it or steal it. And this writing method is not new. If you went through high school, Peter Elbow had Writing Without Teachers and another book, but it's the same, and it's called Flow Writing, it's called, you name it. But she just it's just a quick description of how you do it, and it's hard to learn to do because we're so used to thinking, well, I've got to stay on the lines and I've got to spell everything correctly. And I have to be careful so I don't say anything that offends anybody else in the room. And, oh, that's not a good thought. Get out of here, you know. So in this is it's a time, we usually do timed exercises, and we'll start with small ones and work up to bigger ones. Keep your hand moving. Don't pause to reread the line you have just written. Doesn't mean you have to write fast. It just simply means that you keep writing you take the first thoughts that come into your mind. Because your unconscious has everything that ever happened to you in your life, all the thoughts you've ever had, and it's all flowing like a river through you. And all you have to do is figure out some way to access it and bring it out. So this is a good way to do it. It says, lose control, say what you want to say. Don't worry if it's correct, polite, appropriate, just let it rip. Even if it's not connected to what you've just said, and you don't know that because you're not looking back at that last line, but just write whatever comes into mind. Everything is related. Be specific. Don't say, oh, we went in the car. If it was a Cadillac, if you're like me, you'd have to say, oh, it was a red car. You know, because I don't know kinds of cars. But anyway, specific details are really important. And don't think. Now, you'd think that would be contradictory, too. But the minute we start thinking, we get into trouble. Because we're too logical, too judgmental on that. So don't even think. Just let the unconscious flow through the hand onto the paper. You are. Don't worry about punctuation, spelling, and grammar. You are free to write the worst junk in America, or in the whole world if you want. You can be as specific or non-specific. But we aren't judging it. You write whatever comes. Go for the jugular. If something scary comes up, go for it. How do you know when something scary comes up?
That's when you'll want to pause.
Yeah, and probably change the subject maybe. We were reading as we, Judith and I drove out here together, and I was reading aloud to her. She did all the driving, which was wonderful. I did all the reading. But anyway, when I read a word, and you know how powerful words are, and the instant it was close to the bone or the jugular, my voice would catch. I'd start to tear up. I mean, your unconscious, my unconscious brought all these things, this word in somebody else's life brought all this stuff up out of my unconscious, and I was crying. Had nothing to do really with the story, but whatever was hidden back down inside me. So when you're writing the same way, when you start to, oh, I don't want to say it, you know, that's when you keep going. And these first thoughts have tremendous energy. I mean, the way you write it is not how it will end up as a piece. You may only use one line from all of this writing, or one word. But it will give, when you've done some pages like this, it will give you enough writing to keep you going for months. It's just tremendous. Okay, so keep that by your side, and let's try an exercise to see how wonderful it does look. This is going to bring you back to your natural state of mind. Maybe that's something you want to avoid. But, okay, we'll start with some fairly innocuous things. Like, all right, I want you to, this won't work very well. Some of you were in this room before this class started. So what I want you to do, either think of a place that you were this morning before you came to this building. Think of a place, and I don't want you to name the place in your writing. I want you to describe where you were and how you got to the next place you came to, and it could be this building or maybe it was breakfast or whatever. But I'm going to time you for about 5 minutes, and I just want you to write from the place you first started out this morning, noting good details so that we maybe could even decide where you started out from without having you tell us which chalet you're in or which building you're in or where you're going. Just bring yourself from that first place to this classroom. Now, it could be just before you came here, or it could be when you started out in the morning. Is that? The other thing is, if you're a student who needs really good directions, this is a difficult thing to do to begin with. There are no rules when you're writing. The only rules are that you have good tools to work with, that you, if you're doing writing regularly for yourself, that you date it. Those are the only two rules. And that you simply write and take the first thoughts that come to your mind. But I'm asking you for a specific place, but still do the same thing. And don't take your pencil up once you've started writing. Just keep writing until I say time.
You're real clear about this physical.
Pardon?
This is a physical orientation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Where you... Oh, it doesn't necessarily have to be. No. The other thing is if... No, really. If what I tell you isn't working...
Okay, good.
You know? I mean, I went to a writer's thing, and he set this candle in front of us, and he says, now write. And I sat there for 15 minutes. What do I write? You know, so it doesn't always work for you. So then you take whatever comes to your mind when you say, oh, I can't do that. So something else must slip right in behind it. And regardless of what it is, do it. You know. Start immediately. Grab the first word that comes. I see a lot of pens pausing.
How long are we ready for?
Pardon? 5 minutes. Was anyone here last week and able to take Rebecca Ree's class at all? Wonderful poet. We studied with Carolyn Forshay. But she has a word for her writing, and it's called aleatory writing, which is what we're doing. It's writing achieved by random means. You know, it's kind of like, I want to write, but I'm going to forget about what it is I'm doing and do this other thing, but this other thing is what's going to prime your writing. So when you do an exercise like this, you don't know where you're going or what's going to happen or what you're going to get out of it, but it will prime the writing. So you do all these exercises to access the unconscious, and that's kind of the same thing. By random means, allowing chance and accident to occur, which is wonderful to know. It's not dependent on any skill or ability of your own that it can happen that way. All right, we're not going to read these. We're going to do three short ones, and then you'll have a chance to choose which of the three you want to read out loud. And you can always pass, but of course the class isn't as interesting that way. And also, if someone reads something and it does get close to the bone or the jugular and they begin to cry, they can either say, you know, please, someone else go on, or we can wait until the person can read again, either way. Because writing classes bring up everything from a deep well. So when you're writing, remember that, and when others are reading. All right, I want you to, if you've got that paragraph there, maybe turn it over and write on the back side of that page. Just very quickly, in another 5 minute exercise, write everything you would want me to know about you. Of course, Judith and I know everything about each other, so there's nothing else to write. We've been traveling for 5 days. You can pick someone else in the room, Judith, or someone else you've met already and say, this is what I would like that person to know about me. Okay, finish the sentence you're on, and then skip a few lines or start a new page if you like, if you want to write on these later on, and describe a favorite place you can remember in your childhood, a favorite place for you as a child. Describe a favorite childhood place. Now, before we read, we're going to do one thing. You've got a blank sheet of paper in front of you. The one thing about this kind of writing, the object is to keep pushing yourself to longer and longer writings, because we, for example, Carol Bly, who's a Minnesota writer, when she teaches a short story class, she has everyone write an autobiography of like 1,000 words or 3,000 words the first weekend, so they get all of that out and know that their story is worth writing about and so forth. Because there's lots of stuff we have to write before we ever get to what we really are going to write. And so, for example, most of my poems are probably not what I really want to write yet because I haven't been writing enough and long enough or whatever. So you have to write past a lot of stuff. So this is a beginning, and you could write for hours on what you've been doing and then go through and pick out good stuff. All right, on the blank sheet of paper that you have, we're going to be visual artists for a moment, but we're going to do it. Now you can do this exercise with both hands. You can use your non-dominant hand if you like, or you can use your writing hand. I usually do it with both, but we're scarce for paper here, so we're just going to do one. What I want you to do is a self-portrait with one hand, never raising your pen or your pencil off the paper. And you should do this like every year because it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. Just begin drawing it can be your whole body, it can be your face, I don't care what you do. But just begin drawing at one certain place and do a self-portrait with one hand, never taking it up. Again, if you don't think about it, just do it quickly and you'll be amazed. We could probably start an art gallery doing.
Well, that's all right.
The wonderful thing about art is that there's no right and no wrong. You can just. Okay, hold it up so the person across from you can see. See if they would recognize.
No right or wrong.
And then share them a little later on with each other. So that's great.
My freckles.
It does. How many of you have looked at the New Yorker magazine? When I was getting ready to come here, I thought, you know, I clip and save things. They always have self-portraits in there in the first part. Mm-hmm. People, mm-hmm. But they're wonderful. Some of them, you don't know who it is, except that they have a name under it. But I thought, oh, I wish I had cut all those out and saved them so you could see the different, how you view yourself. So you could do a self-portrait again, and it wouldn't actually be your face or your body. It could be something else that you see yourself as, so it could be something. But this is another good exercise. Just try it next time with your hand that works even less well than your right or left, you know, your non-dominant hand. But do one of each, and then put them side by side and frame them. One is your conscious self, and the other is your unconscious self. So there are all kinds of fun things you can do with it. Now, let's read out loud. Who would like to start? Okay, would you just be sure to
choose which one?
You may choose which one you'd like to read, right? Because we won't. If we each read once, that means that's probably as far as we get. Loudly, if you would.
My favorite childhood place was Oak Creek Canyon, located about 17 miles south of Flagstaff, Arizona. I am now sad to realize that so many people in the country now know about Sedona, and where developers had built resorts and houses in the area. So it is no longer the peaceful place it once was.
You want to go next?
Sure. What I want you to know about me.
Okay.
Struggling for balance, integrity, wanting some newness, weighing my own life against those of my adult children who are again living at home. Are they winning?
That's a good question.
Okay.
You know what I want? You know about me. I'm diabetic. It makes me structure. I hate that. It makes me have to stop the intensity of my living to attend to this disease that lives inside of me. I don't always think or remember I have a disease. It even feels strange to write it. I'm healthy. I do lots. Nothing stops me from anything except those crazy low sugars that make my head feel like it's falling off and my eyes see weird.
Very important thing for everybody around you to know about. I taught 7th grade one year, and they didn't tell me that one of the boys had diabetes. That's very bad.
Favorite place. Every summer during my childhood, I spent as much time as possible with my maternal grandmother at the only home she owned, a lake cottage. My sister and I had a room made by the high headboard of our bed, creating a hall from the kitchen to the back door, about 2 feet between the bed and windows. Finished the spot. An old brocade spread hung on a pole across the whole length.
Good. Can you hear all these wonderful details? You're all good writers already. Okay.
Everything I want you to know. 36, disabled with psychothymic depression. Coming out of a should structured cocoon to open air, out of a closet, and into a field of possibility. No required work except to center myself into what I want, my ideas, dreams, visions.
That's the one word you used there. This is a good one. Take it out of the English language. I'll be a little. Okay.
Ooh. I'll read the most risky, what I want you to know about myself.
Okay.
I choose not to reveal. To open a little would be, open me to my all. My all wells within, it quells from my depths. And so I may choose to stay safe in surface. I may smile and laugh and talk of what we ate or talked about in a class. I would not choose likely to expect that we could, in such a short encounter, choose to drop our outer cloaks and reveal to each other ourselves.
Thank you very much.
I want you to know who I really am, but it's kind of scary to tell you. It's much easier to give you the facts. How old I am, my marital status, my kids' names and ages, maybe even where I live. I'd rather, if it weren't so scary, share my passions and my fears.
I may be the one that's the most scary for you to be.
Okay. That's brave.
Sitting in the sunshine, watching the sun, the mountains, the trees, the chipmunk. The bench made of wood feels warm against my bare legs. I sit and watch the dock fill up with baggage. The sadness grips me because the... this is my last day at Holden. I don't know why the sadness goes so deep. Perhaps it's no pull for me. I don't want to leave the peace and feeling of wholeness I have here. And also I don't want to return to the chaos of my life in the outside world. I feel the pull of staying here is the strongest.
I'll do the first one, this game of consciousness. Soft steps cushioned upon the rug, whispered echoes of silence, I move into the talking pages, denying the urge yet, seeking adventure, climbing, perhaps hiking, nature essays, gotta go quick, but wait, I gotta have the right thing. Here's one I'm writing, no, here, a book on oxymorons. Quick, grab it, run, no, walk fast, but so quietly down the hall. Oh, what's that obnoxious rattling noise? I hate fans, air conditioners, noisemakers. Did someone forget to turn it off? Should I reach in and turn it off? Oh, but what if someone's in there?
Nice work in that.
Do the first one also. From struggling dreams, I squinted at my quiet son on the floor, fully dressed and studying intently the colored pictures in print about the dinosaurs. In dim light, filtering through the thin morning curtains, he squinted, tried to be quiet while yearning for the rest of us to awaken. I opened one eye and smiled at his courtesy and turned on a reading light, drawing him closer to it. I'm hungry. As the bell rang, when's breakfast? He said with quiet urgency.